Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Do I believe in God? Yeah, I believe in God. I don't believe in God as some old guy with a beard or anything like that, but as a power, yeah.
What about Satan?
Yeah, well, if you believe in God, you believe in Satan. It doesn't necessarily mean you worship Satan, but yeah, Satan's probably one of the most misunderstood characters in the Bible or in Christian religion. Is God's most beloved angel, his original right-hand man.
Who designed your new t-shirt?
You mean the one with the demon, the beastie guy strangling Jesus? His heart's glowing, blood's coming out of his eyes.
That's the one.
Yeah, I thought of that one.
Do you think that's too much for some people?
Yeah, it's cool.
Don't you care?
Yeah, I care. I like it. That's how much I care about it. I cared about it so much that I had it put on a t-shirt.
Listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, part of the Decibel Geek Podcast Network and Uncontrolled Noise Radio. Today we have part two of the Three Hits from Hell series. We get into the Danzig record, Danzig 2, Lucifuge. All sorts of spooky shit today, people. So let's kick it over to our host, Luce Cannon and Baco, with special guest from the Disciples of the Watch podcast. I'm talking about Gene Vogel.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. I'm your host, Luce Cannon, and I am joined by a man so evil, he definitely will never be photographed buying kitty litter. Baco, how are you, sir?
I am well, Luce. Always a pleasure talking to you. We are at episode two of our Three Hits from Hell for the whole month of October. We have another special guest, though, don't we?
We do. Would you like to introduce him?
I'm giving you the honors.
Oh, thank you. He is a man that has sat through an entire ball-busting episode on his last spectacular episode, Iced Earth, a man with a great sense of humor, Gene Vogel, everybody, yes?
Yes, from the band Mortificator and the host of the wonderful podcast, Disciples of the Watch. Gene, how are you?
I am doing well, guys. Thanks for having me here. Yes. I appreciate it.
And if you're a first-time listener or you're jumping in on these episodes, make sure you go back to last year. This is becoming a tradition where Gene was part of a very comprehensive Black Sabbath discography that also included interviews with who?
Baco? We had Dave Walker, a little bit of Ron Keel talking about his time in Black Sabbath, and of course, the author, Martin Popoff.
Yes. So thank you. I believe it was that your brainchild, Gene, or is it between you and Baco, or how did that work out with the Black Sabbath
Baco
last year?
That was Baco.
Yeah.
I want a Gene on the show because he's the creepiest guy I know.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. But very, very, very handsome frontman as well, wouldn't you say?
Oh, very much, yes. He is the panty dropper
of Mortificator.
Of Mortificator, yes.
Sure, yeah.
He's what gets the titties bouncing.
Mm-hmm. That's what it says in his bio on Wikipedia.
Somebody's reading it, at least.
That's right. Do you have a bio on Wikipedia? Because you should. I think both Baco and I should start our own bio, too.
You start your own Wikipedia.
All you got to do is add a lot of footnotes, and Wikipedia will think you're legit. Lots of links. That's how it works.
Perfect.
Anyway, but thank you for joining us on this. And, Baco, I'm going to throw it to you because this is your suggestion, correct?
Yeah, my pick for the month of October, Three Hits from Hell, is Danzig 2, Lucifuge. I think I've talked about it on the show quite a bit. Danzig is probably a top five, top ten artist for me, especially the first four records of his eponymously named band, Danzig. And this album, to me, is really one of the kind of, it really sums up the band for one thing, but definitely this time of year you get the leaves fall out of the tree, the chill hits the air, especially like it is today in Minnesota, right, Gene?
Oh, absolutely.
A little windy and fucking cold, man.
And snowed earlier.
Yeah, we got a little bit of snow today, early October. But yeah, for me, this is definitely a creepy fucking record, and got some ominous artwork and all that good stuff.
As I understand it, from this day forward, you play this in a loop on your porch for the neighbors to hear. Is that correct?
Only if I also sit on the porch without a shirt on.
Holding a upside down cross.
And a shotgun.
Okay. Well, that's nice.
And that's how I was greeted when I got here.
Welcome, Gene.
Yeah, it's like
and for some reason a Bible. I don't know why, but I think it sets the tone.
That was the creepy thing. That and you asking me to remove my pants before I entered your home.
More pants removal.
I had to make sure you weren't a vampire.
Yeah, we freeball here, but we're actually wearing shorts too. What are you guys wearing? But by the way, quick fashion break, just so I can understand, because I don't have anybody in my studio ever, and it's cool that you have, you know, members of Flip and Gene Vogel there. So what is the setup? Gene? What is Baco wearing? Is the host?
He's got a lovely pair of boxer shorts on that...
I knew it!
The ass has been cut out.
Don't ask me how
I know.
Oh, good. So basically he's essentially recreating the scene from... the entire Get Off part from the with Prince.
Absolutely. Gold.
What else? What do you... can you describe what Gene is wearing?
Yeah, he's wearing a talking metal shirt, and all I can say is I can see the bottom sack. You know what underboob is?
Hey! Sure, you got the undersack going on?
Yeah, you got like the basically undersack, but a sack bottom.
So it's like reverse cleavage.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And so, I do want to mention that Baco is rocking a Minnesota Vikings t-shirt.
Oh, yes.
All right.
With the nipples cut out.
Hey! Of course.
Sure. But with that said, Baco, true fan. Baco, going back to the album, why don't you bring us in?
What are you wearing, though? Hey,
yeah, what the hell?
Oh, man? I'm sorry. Yeah, sure, I'm sorry. I am.
Paint a picture
I am wearing,
for the audience, man.
Nah, no problem. I'm wearing on eBay. I bought Tommy Lee's leather jockstrap from the Girls tour, and that's it.
Nice.
So you're naked other than wearing Tommy Lee's jockstrap on your head?
That's correct. And I'm wearing a muffler, too.
Well, that visual is definitely going to keep the female audience locked in for...
Of course. That's Janet from Nebraska.
Moist.
Well, before we get into the actual record, why don't we talk a little bit about how we all got into Danzig. Obviously, I will start. I actually saw the Mother video and the video for Twist of Cain on Headbangers Ball on the same episode. And I was actually just like, wow, this is fucking amazing. So I went out and bought the first Danzig cassette. I had no idea. I'd heard of the Misfits and Samhain, believe it or not, mainly because of Metallica t-shirts for Samhain. But I had no idea that... even, you know, probably for at least a year that I was listening to the singer for both those bands. with the Danzig stuff. That first record to me is perfect. This record is perfect. So right out of the gate, I think Danzig, you know, basically goes two for two with his catalog. I eventually grew to like, you know, by the time he gets to like, you know, four albums deep, I know about the Misfits. I know about Samhain. I'm buying all this stuff, checking it all out, you know, and basically Glenn Danzig pretty much from the Misfits up through his first four records is a pioneer in music and one of the most influential artists of rock music history. I say that with no tongue-in-cheek, no joke at all. I think he was always constantly ahead of the curve during that period. After that, I don't know that I would say that too much, but he definitely influenced a ton of different genres and is responsible for a lot of bands that suck and some that don't.
Hey!
Can I ask a question about the Samhain part? Is that obviously, can you explain that the Samhain, was Samhain the exact same band, just not with the flip with to the Danzig name, or was there a little bit of difference?
There was a decent amount of difference. Samhain had Erie and Glenn in it from the beginning.
Okay.
And there was a guy named London that was a member for a good chunk of that. But there's only three records there. It's not until the last record that the guitar player for what we're going to call Danzig, John Christ, he doesn't come in until the very last Samhain record, and Chuck Biscuits, the drummer from I know, right? I think it's from
the
DOA.
The name that doesn't fit.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, a good drummer, weird name. But he was never in Samhain. Is all I'm getting at. He came in after Rick Rubin got involved, and Rick Rubin was the one who actually said it's no longer going to be called Samhain. It's going to be called Danzig.
Okay, so when they signed with Deaf American or whatever, that was the flip, and there's a little bit of change. And to my understanding, for the change from Samhain to Danzig, was there a massive? Because I've never heard Samhain.
No, the first two Samhain records are very different. The last Samhain record with John Christ, you're starting to see kind of like a, almost like a demo quality punk version of what became the Rick Rubin kind of polished version of Samhain. But you can kind of hear it, you know what I mean? It's got like, you know, hearing kind of earlier recordings of a band you dig. But the two prior to that, they're not like it at all. Where did you come in with Danzig?
Thursday.
Okay,
so,
cool.
No, but in all seriousness, I mean, I was totally aware of Danzig, Mother, things that, you know.
Mother!
Yeah, exactly. But for whatever reason, it never really clicked with me. I've never owned nor still own a Danzig album. But, I mean, I knew of him, and I didn't dislike the songs that I'd heard, but it was just like from a distance. But then I did listen to this album, obviously, in full for this episode several times over the last couple weeks. And I'll share my thoughts soon. But I don't have too much to say about it, except that, you know, I knew the history and the fact that Metallica covered tons of Misfits songs. So I was familiar with Glenn Danzig himself.
And if I may, I'll touch on a couple things before we kick it to Gene.
Sure.
The song Mother really didn't break until after this record. They released an EP. But the other thing is, you touched on the Erie Vaughan interview. I would like to say one thing that I take a little personal pride in, and I'm not even sure why. But the episode opens up with a recording of the song Twisted Cane that I recorded entirely by myself. Drums, bass, vocals, guitar. It's all me. I saw a comment because Erie shared the episode on Facebook, and someone said, "Holy crap, where the hell did that come from?" And Erie's response was, "I'm not sure, probably Samhain demos."
I can feel it jabbing.
Actually fooled the member of Danzig, and I might have been. So go back and listen to the part two of the Erie Vaughn interview a little over a year ago, and I'm very proud that I actually duped a member of Danzig.
Well done. I gotta say, though, you know, since you're from Minnesota, you're pretty much the Prince version of Sam Hain playing all instruments.
That explains my royalties.
Was it recorded in Paisley Park?
It was recorded in Broken Bulb Studios. Same place I record every episode of Cobras and Fire, the Cobra Studio North.
Yeah.
All right. Gene Vogel, our esteemed guest, let's hear your thoughts on how you got into Danzig.
Boy, I was a late bloomer on Danzig. That whole first album totally passed me by, and I think it may have been just what Metallica had done with generating interest. You know, they did it with a few bands. Faith No More was another band for me.
Yep.
That Metallica turned me on to, or even, you know, Cliff Burton, if you want to really nail it down, because he was a huge Faith No More guy. Him and Jim Martin were huge friends. So Danzig 2 comes along, and I don't know how I just decided, okay, Danzig's got a new album out. I'm not even sure how this cassette came into my possession.
This is your entry point.
This is my entry
point.
Wow. Oh, that's cool.
And I have to tell you that this cassette lived in my boombox that was strapped in the back of my 1976 Monte Carlo that didn't have a stereo in it, so hence the boombox strapped into the back seat. This lived into that boombox for quite a long time.
I actually had that same setup, by the way, in one of my first car, because the stereo sucked.
What was the car?
It was a Buick Skylark 1982, the color of puke. Like yellow. It was. I inherited
like a
it from my...
Helmet?
Say it again?
It looked like a Green Bay Packer helmet.
It was like off, I don't know what color, it was like an off variation of yellow, and I inherited it from my grandmother that passed away. So it was pretty sweet car, but my point is that I haven't heard anybody talking about the boombox in the back seat being the stereo for the car, and I don't think ever, but that was my stereo. So well done, Gene.
We're like brothers now.
That's right. See? It's blood brothers.
Oh, my God.
Boombox brothers.
That's a thing now.
Anyway, carry on, Gene.
That's my intro to Danzig and the whole everything. You know, and it's funny because I eventually did go back, which, you know, that happens so much with bands where you get in later in their catalog and then you go back. And it took a while for that first album to really grab me. And the same thing with the third
actually
album.
Same here. When I bought it, but I would play the it was the first song on side one and side two, "Twisted Cane and Mother." It was probably until I got to Danzig 4 that I went back and realized I liked the whole record. Anyways,
nice. Yeah, for me it would be many years after Danzig 3 came out. It was funny because I was so invested in this album that everything that came after it wasn't as interesting. And eventually, later on, though, I would come to appreciate Danzig 3, and I really enjoy that album now. But I was just kind of surprised at how much time I spent with this album and turned other people on to it, and then just really got away from it after that. I think I was just invested in so many different other bands that Danzig just kind of fell away from me for a while there. But this album never was off my radar.
And, you know, we'll get into some of the details on the record, but I would like to mention that for the people who are kind of newer to the show, I mean, it's not something we talk about every episode, or she may have missed it. But I was married on Halloween in 2007. The day before, Danzig was playing in we got married in Las Vegas, and Danzig was playing there. And Doyle had a band at the time called Gorgeous Frankenstein, and so they were one of the opening acts. And so I got to see Doyle play with his new band, you know, Doyle from the Misfits. In spite of my interview with him, I appreciate him as an artist. But the coolest
I think he owned the same phone.
Yeah, he probably. I'm not sure. I think he might have just discovered phone technology shortly before I interviewed him. Go back and check that 9-minute gem out anytime you guys want. 19 questions in 9 minutes. I guarantee you're going to be amazed at that.
It's like speed dating.
Yeah, it's like a speed dating interview. Anyway, with all that said, it was very cool to see Danzig almost be like my wedding band. But even better, it was like Doyle came out and they played like 5 Misfits tunes. And that was as close as I was ever going to see to the actual Misfits play. You know what I mean? Because sure. Danzig has pretty much ignored the Misfits and almost refused to answer questions about him through most of his career. The idea that he did this was kind of shocking to me. And it was like almost like he was doing it for the whole tour. Don't get me wrong. But it was really cool that day. And I knew I was getting married the next day. And I was like, wow, it meant a lot to me is all I'm getting at. And it meant a lot to my wife that it meant a lot to me, I guess. And although my buddy
Danzig got on stage with him for those 5 songs.
Well, vice versa. Doyle came up at the end of the Danzig set, and they hammered out 5 songs.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
The best part was that my boy Wilson was there. We've talked about him on the show.
Oh, yeah.
He's not familiar with the Misfits, and he's never been a fan of punk music. And it was so awesome. Like, after each song, he goes like,
that was a song?
It was, you know, the Misfits, especially like a lot of their stuff, they're like 1 minute and 10 seconds long. You know, it's like, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, that's it.
Hey,
let's get into the record a little bit, shall we?
Hey,
please.
This record was released on June 26, 1990, Loose Cannon's birthday.
Yes.
It was recorded between June and May of 1990. June 89 and May. And it took a long time to fucking record this damn thing, almost a year, if this is right, anyway.
It was in Tampa, right?
It was not in Tampa.
I'm sorry, I got my notes wrong.
Produced by Rick Rubin, which means he never heard the record.
but he didn't enjoy a couch.
And this has, yeah, he enjoyed a couch, probably somewhere near where they were recording. This was basically the classic lineup of Danzig for the first 4 records. Glenn Danzig on vocals, Erie Vaughn on bass, John Christ on guitars, and, of course, Loose Cannon's favorite drummer, Chuck Biscuits.
Oh, yeah.
Let's start with the album artwork. Loose, the actual album cover has a shot of Glenn Danzig's slightly hairy chest with him clutching a cross. Which, of course, is evil as fuck. But when you fold the CD cover out, it's an upside-down cross. I just texted you a picture of it. Can you see it yet?
Yep, I've seen this before.
Okay.
I had a buddy that had this.
I will tell you one thing about this. This record probably sold at least between somewhere in the neighborhood of 200,000 to 500,000 copies, right?
That's a big range.
It's a broad range, but it's still, you know, I mean, it's a pretty big number is all I'm getting at.
Sure.
This is my day job is doing stuff like this. Like, I've been in printing for the longest time. I can promise you one thing. There still does not exist a machine that can fold this thing the way it is, meaning they had to have people hand fold this.
Really?
For hundreds of thousands of copies, which to me is first of all, it's expensive.
Yeah.
And that's a commitment to the bit. To me, I open up this record and I flip that sucker out and it's an upside down cross and I go, this guy gets me.
All I got to tell you is apparently the Danzig Corporation wasn't with a whole it's a profit deal idea.
No, they definitely were not.
That's a lot of paper and a lot of folding.
Yeah, no doubt. It definitely is. And I got to believe it was probably even hand-inserted into the cover at that point.
I got to tell you, though, it's a very effective, because I do remember seeing this. I don't remember when exactly, but it is a very impactful CD package. I can't even think of another. You're right. Like, I don't. Can you think of Gene or anything like that where there's one that is a, even with the extra part, you know, that makes the cross, that makes the length of the cross. Can you think of one that's a four
panel? No, not off the top of my head. No.
Right, Baco?
No, yeah, no. Yes, I mean, no. Slayer recently did it with Repentless.
And that was
that's probably the second time I've saw that.
I mean, you could think of that as a pure, like a red cross. Let's just take the top part off. I see what you're saying. That's very...
Anytime you cut out like corners, like basically the squares, you no longer can machine fold this.
Well, according to Wikipedia, this sold 329,000 copies. Of course, that's whenever that was updated last.
So no, that's a combination of cassettes and CDs. So there's probably at least a solid 150,000 of these were made on CD.
Yeah, and this is a hard one to get on vinyl.
Oh, there was an actual vinyl release of it in 92?
Yes, there was.
Can I ask you this too, though, Baco, like, in all seriousness? What year again was the live version of Mother or whatever version it was?
93. And this, I think, is 91 or 92. This came out.
This is 1990.
Or 1990.
1990. That freaks me out. So where 1993? What album was current at that time? For is that number four? Is it number?
Yeah,
three?
Actually, for Danzig, you mean?
Yeah.
Their most recent full length at that time would have been. God, I want to make sure I got this right. Gene, do you have the
I'm looking at it real quick.
Danzig it was before 3 4.
Was 92.
It was definitely before 4.
Danzig 4 was released in 1994.
Yeah, but what was the EP released on?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're thinking of
Thrall, Demon Sweat Live.
That's
that Demon Sweat Live. All right, go ahead.
1993.
Okay, so that would have been after Danzig 3, How the Gods Kill.
Okay, yeah, so essentially that was when it hit, when now the back catalog. This is for a very unique thing like you're talking about, where they had three full albums out and then a live album. Actually, that's the Kiss thing almost, you know.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. The story goes that Chuck Biscuits ran out of money or something, and I don't know how legitimate that part is, but Danzig approached Rick Rubin about doing an EP. And they're like, EPs don't sell. And he brought up the Metallica EP, and he's like, all right, we'll do an EP. And so, yeah, it's like, I think it's two studio tracks and three live tracks. And the live track really took off.
Okay.
The music video for Mother was from the second music video for Mother was from that. And that's when they kind of went. I mean, they were doing pretty good on the first three records, but they weren't in that gold platinum range.
Right, that was the one that broke him. Anyway, it's just a very unique story for a band.
Yeah, and I think that that song itself may have pushed the back catalog even more so, because Danzig, according to Wikipedia, Danzig, the original, Danzig 1, the eponymous, it went gold.
Oh, okay.
So I have a feeling that was based purely
on... That
had
to be, yeah.
Because then they went back and grabbed the original version of the Mother. Yeah, I gotcha.
Now, I do have that on vinyl, but I stole it from the college radio station I was working at the time.
Nice.
So took it home before they, you know, folded.
Cobra hack. Go to college, work at the radio station, steal records. And now you have to steal, like, streams.
That's right. Let's break into it, man.
That's why streaming exists, to stop college radio station students from stealing records.
Yeah, it is a.
That's a reverse Cobra hack. We'll get into track one. The album opens up with a killer track, "Long Way Back from Hell." I fucking love this tune. Look, honest to God, this is gonna be like listening to Rock and Metal Combat Show talk about the Aerosmith record "Rocks." I'm probably gonna go 10 out of 10 on every track on here. I do love this record. Let's just get it out of the way, but. "Long Way Back from Hell" is just a perfect Danzig song. Great way to open a record. It just, you know, blasts you right in the face, you know, like a geyser wad out of loose cannon after a 10-day break. Yeah. If you don't like this song, you're probably not going to be a big Danzig fan.
Before I hand it to Gene, can I talk about Glenn's voice for me? I think, and this is just speaking from somebody that first off, I'll just tell you this. I'll just reveal. I was pleasantly surprised by this album. This was not one that it's, and I'll tell you why in a little bit going forward, but it was different than I expected. Now, with that said, just like a, like being a fan of Volbeat, for example, for a unique voice.
Good comparison.
Danzig's voice is very polarizing. You're either in it or you're out. And sometimes sometimes it works great and sometimes it does not for me. But for this opening track, to summarize, Long Way Back from Hell, every single part of the song, from the riff to the vocals to everything like that, it's excellent. And I go back to the Volbeat thing too, because sometimes for a guy that speaks English, you can't understand a fucking thing that Danzig says. But the effect and everything in this.
When he's singing, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like when he's singing sometimes, and I'll go into
what song.
I like that
with vocalists though. Anyway.
Good and bad. This song, it really works for it, but there's a song coming up that I'll tell you that it is a skipper for me because of the over-accentuation of that. Almost like over-accentuating a Boston accent.
Almost like he knows it and he's like, I'm really going to push it this time?
Yeah, okay, yeah. For certain tracks.
So I don't know if you mentioned this or not, Paco, but the music and lyrics, all of this are credited to Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, every song on every Danzig record and every Misfits record and every Samhain record is conveniently only written entirely by Glenn.
Hey!
Part of the reason that they have some issues. You know, the weird thing is I don't doubt that he wrote all the melody and lyrics. I definitely have some skepticism that he wrote all the music.
Yeah, come on. This is a balls move. I've never seen any band that has one. Can you think of any band that just
Ozzy.
Says one per?
Thank you. you totally pulled the rug off from underneath me. I'm like,
yeah, you're right.
Probably involved.
Yeah, but didn't some. Didn't
he
some
lightened
Ozzy
up
solo?
Later on. Yeah, he. It's not his entire career.
Right.
Was Danzig a dick to not share songwriting credit, or was he realizing that, like, there's only one person, there's only enough money for one of us to make a career out of this? So I'm just gonna.
It's not the same thing as being a dick.
I guess, but like, well, yeah, look, what I'm saying is that like Danzig is like, I don't think Danzig lives in the same kind of house James Hetfield does. Okay, I think Danzig probably needs to kind of be Danzig all the time just to kind of pay the bills. And if he had to share that money with three other dudes equally, Danzig would probably be doing a podcast called Cobras and Fire.
Well, understood. But I am looking on the Wikipedia thing, and it did say, I don't know if this leads credence to the fact that he got all the songwriting credit, but it looks like between 88 to 1996, he was banging Sharon Osbourne.
That actually does reverse credence. She would have taken all the songwriting.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
Anyway.
So speaking of Sharon Osbourne, the song "Long Way Back from Hell,"
you know when Dio wasn't banging her on the side, Glenn was.
He had to be.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So yeah, definitely a long way back from hell. If you're sitting, you know what a long way back from hell would be like? Walking from what's that TV show she has? The Talk. It's like it's the walk from like just being on the show to the dressing room.
But, I mean, from the dressing room to the show.
Well, it's back from hell, not to hell.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Right. I flipped that in my head. I was thinking the hell would be going to. Good point.
Betwixt.
So this one here, I got simple yet effective opening to the track and a song with great energy to kick off the album. John Christ's playing is also simple, yet there's a groove that is undeniably his that I love. Some guitar players think that you don't have to do anything before or after striking a chord, but John does what so many great guitar players do, and he uses those moments to create ambiance and simple tricks with, like, muting the strings and striking them with his pick hand. Glenn's piano/keyboard accents help add a little more ambiance to this song with great lyrics and a great performance by Chuck and Erie. I love this song. I give this one a solid 10 out of 10 every time.
He was such a key part.
Yes.
Like, on how him and Chuck Biscuits, more than Erie Vaughan, I think were like that. He was almost like a rhythm section and a guitar player. Yeah. They just played together so tight. And when he was gone, everything changed. I mean, first of all, when the band kind of ended after 4, Danzig went industrial. And then the records after that, like the the 666, the Danzig 666 record was also trying to get a little more back to his old style with a mix of that industrial style. And then everything since then just has kind of sounded, well, at times there's really good stuff there. You can still get that Danzig songwriting style. That just rawness and blues energy is gone out of the band. And I think it's because of Chuck Biscuits and because of John Christ not being there. And I'm not trying to shortchange Erie Vaughan. He's a very key member and all that stuff. But I just think those two guys pretty much developed that classic Danzig sound that is on album 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Well, and 4 is for me is a little bit of a departure. And I know that John himself has said that that was an album that he struggled with writing for.
That was one that kind of almost went back to almost that Sam Hain kind of feel, where they were kind of almost like a goth band.
Chuck Biscuits does have a little bit of history before he came to Danzig.
Of course.
He was actually in Black Flag and toured
them. Towards the very end of Black Flag.
Yep. In 1982, he toured with them for 5 months. He briefly filled in on drums for a few shows with the Red Hot Chili Peppers during their Freaky Styley tour.
Did not know that.
And that was in 86. And then in 1987, of course, he joins Danzig. And,
well, he was in DOA at some point there.
And like you mentioned, he was also in DOA. Wait a minute, both drummers. I don't know, I'm sorry. Oh, he's a brother of Ken Dimwit Montgomery.
Isn't he related to Schaefer of
Chuck
Iser?
Biscuits and Ken Dimwit. There's your fucking dual drummers tour.
And you wonder why they didn't get songwriting credit.
They were a fixture on the Vancouver music scene. At different times, both drummers played drums for DOA. And then, of course, Biscuits joined Black Flag in 1982.
Anyway, track 2, Snakes of Christ. That live EP. I like that version better than this one, but it's a good song.
I love the fact the way that goes from that long way back from hell actually fades into Snakes of Christ.
Nice.
So it was a really cool way. And actually, this entire album pretty much has very, very little, I guess, buffer between songs, which leads to each one.
Yeah.
So, but Snakes of Christ, I like this song. The only thing I can't get over is how much it reminds me of War Machine. And it's not like War Machine is a very unique riff, I guess.
Man.
But it's very similar.
Stone Temple Pilots song reminds me of War Machine, not this one.
Well, no, this one really reminds me of War Machine. I do love that's not really an insult. I love style of riff. But my favorite part of this song is around the 2.5 or 3 minute mark when they have the breakdown where it goes drums and then they kind of, change the key of where the riff goes into. But I do really like the song. I think everything works. It's like anything, like you hear a song and it jumps in there. That's the only thing I have against it, is it just reminds me too much of War Machine.
I too like the bleeding from the previous track. That's something that Rick Rubin's apparently a big fan of. He did that with Slayer. Was it season of the, or no, I'm sorry, yeah. Not seasons. I'm drawing a huge blank here.
Oh, Rain and Blood?
Rain and Blood, thank you. Just like everything just crunched together, and like Luis, you were mentioning, there's not a lot of lag between these songs. They kind of just really crunch together, and it almost feels like it's just one continuous album in a fashion. But for me, this song, the previous song leading into this one, Long Way Back From Hell, Into Snakes of Christ, this has kind of become my Waiting on the Bus, Waiting for the Bus, or Jesus Just Left Chicago from ZZ Top, or Heartbreaker, Living Loving Made from
I Can See That,
Zeppelin.
Sure.
You know, those kind of songs. Another one, Bites Dust, We're the Champions.
Yeah.
Where it's like you kind of need these together. They really just kind of click. And to hear one with the other almost feels you a little bit, leaves you a little bit wanting. And of course, Postmortem and Rain and Blood is another one.
That, yeah, that's where you're going with that whole Rick Rubin comparison.
Yep. So I love that they keep the momentum rolling into the second track. The breakdown at the two minute 22nd mark is
ooh. So you noticed that too?
Yes, that was phenomenal. Really stood out. The lead section is somewhat lackluster, but it definitely works. And you know, for my personal rating, I gave this an 8 out of 10.
Nice. And I should mention that by all accounts, Rick Rubin is actually producing this record. This is not the guy on the couch taking a nap and saying, send me the tapes when you're done. This is still during his peak.
In summary, these first two tracks are 2 for 2 for me. And also, just like Bako just said, the production jumped out at me too. It's just... I don't know, organic, or it's not perfect, but it sounds like it should be for this type of album.
You know, we touched on this a little bit ago. Do you like kind of the minimalist approach that Danzig during this era had, which I'm a big fan of? It's almost bluesy. It's literally one guitar, not over-tracked. And by the way, I don't mind bands that double-track and have two guitars, but I love the way this band just sounds. When they just, it's just one vocal, one drum, one bass, one guitar, and then overdub leads.
I was surprised with how basic, in a good way, this album was. And like you're just saying, I'll go into this later, but bluesy was what I was shocked about with a lot of these later tracks. To me, this is kind of the same technique that he used with Johnny Cash later. Just minimalistic, here it is. And it still works.
Well, then you should listen to the record before and after this, because they're very much the same.
Okay, cool. Good.
Anyway, we'll get to track 3 here, Killer Wolf, which was the single, the lead single in the video. Like all things Danzig, if there's a music video, it's kind of unintentionally hilarious.
Shirts? Any shirts?
Not on Danzig, if I recall correct. Sure. It's been a while since I've seen it. This song, actually, I like a lot more now than I did at the time. This to me was the first one. Was like, even when I saw the video, I was like, I wasn't sure I was going to buy the record after I saw, because I saw the video before it came out. I'm like, but it's actually a pretty fun song. I'm the wolf.
This is the one that I'm talking about. Like when you see a movie and Ben Affleck, who's from Boston, over-accentuates his Boston accent. This is the one that goes way over the top for me. It doesn't work for me. That's my summary.
I get it, though.
Oh, okay.
What you're saying there? If you're talking about this song, yeah, I think I'd have to agree with you a little bit.
Okay, so that's my summary on this one. Gene?
And hope before Gene gets in, my brain just clicked. I get the War Machine reference. Gene?
Wow. Okay.
Boom, bam, boom, bam, boom, bam, boom, bam, burning. That's what you're getting at.
Yep.
All right, so track 3, Killer Wolf, 3:59 time on that. So we slow things
according
down.
According to the official CD pressing.
Yeah, what do you got?
Exactly 4 minutes.
Hey! Okay, perfect.
So we slow things down, and we got a bluesy rocker. Danzig is the wolf. He's going to go inside your little girl. Then he's going to come inside your little girl.
Oh, my God. This is a... Okay. All right.
So,
go ahead.
Lyrically, it's not Shakespeare, but it works for this song, especially, you know, being kind of a bluesy rocker.
I'm the Hey!
And for me, I gave this one 8 out of 10. Now, this one, Baco, though, like you mentioned, this was a grower song for me. When I first got this album, this was one of those that I wouldn't skip it, but it was less desirable than the previous two tracks.
The next track up is Tired of Being Alive, probably one of my top 10 Danzig songs. He sings this, and just hearing those words, it's almost like it doesn't matter what the verse lyrics are, because they're really not that deep. But one of the things that Danzig has always been really good at, it was like touching on that perfect, dark, moody melody to fit the music that he was doing.
I like the song a lot, too. I do, like, I'm on the Wikipedia right now. The working title was 13 Reasons Why.
It was actually 13 Reasons Why Season 2.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
It's about time we get a fucking joke in here. Come on, guys. Let's lighten up. It's fucking Danzig.
Yeah, he's all comedy. Go back to the whole thing about shirtless Danzig. Do you think that's how they balanced it, was they could have somebody fold their CDs together, but they didn't have to buy any shirts? Is that how they made the profit?
The Danzig merch table is just like an empty thing. It's like buy the
They have no shirts. Like, they all sell their shirts. They're anti-shirt. They're anti-Christ
like, for
20 and anti-shirt.
Bucks, you get nothing. Here's $25 to get no shirt.
You just hand us $25 and you still are all buff.
You just walk around and like, yeah, you hand them $25 and you look great.
Do you think that they had like 15% off coupons for LA Fitness or anything? What do you think?
I don't think LA Fitness exists back then.
Oh, man, I don't know what's going on. I'm sorry. What conglomerates
was...
of
Bally's?
What about just the
It was like, Bally's the Bally's Danzig membership, $25 and you don't get to wear a shirt. You don't have to wear a shirt. And you get to eat
YMCA.
Cereal with Chuck Biscuits.
All right. Chuck Biscuits, original drummer of the Village People. All right.
I think
continue.
That's true. I think that's
yes,
what does Eric Miller call that? A fake true fact?
Yeah, untrue fact.
Untrue fact, yes, sir.
I'm pretty sure that most of Danzig's merch sales were in pasties.
Hey!
Ooh, pasties.
Yes.
Can you imagine the band there just shirtless but just like things over the nipples? Oh my God, that'd be amazing. What do you think? I think that is a rule in Tampa, by the way.
I'm full chug.
Hey!
Right. Me too.
Three quarter. Have you guys heard the Jesse James, the bike building guy's story about when he was a bodyguard for Danzig?
I do remember that. Was that the book called Banging Sandra Bullock?
Apparently, they were at First Ave and Prince was there. And like he tells us hilarious. I can't. I'm going to paraphrase here. I'm doing the best I can.
Please.
But basically, like, these guys are so fucking short.
Hey,
Are all Danzig short? Like 5'4"?
Well, Danzig is like 5'2", and Prince is like 5'2".
Sure.
And so it's like Prince and Danzig, and then Jesse James, and like he thought it was like this is weird as fuck that like Prince is talking to Danzig, and I wish I knew that story better, but
tired of being alive. Speaking of my life,
<That's>
this episode, we clocked this one a little bit over 4 minutes. I really like the swagger of this song. The rhythm pulls me in every time. Great chorus, great dirty lead. Perfect.
Please.
Well, it's nothing fancy overall. I totally dig it. It picks up in the end to finish strong. Another 8 out of 10.
And if it's okay with our esteemed guest, Gene, I'll get to the next song.
Please.
I love this tune. I'm the one, man.
Places I've lived, you don't wanna know. Well, if you wanna hear evil, just come a little bit close. I was a snake-eyed boy, when at the age of 5, I made love to the howl of the wolves. With a dark-haired girl. So if you wanna hear evil, I come a little bit close. She whispered in my ear, little boy, you the one. Set the world to rights, or make it tremble in fear. Do it one more time, 'cause you're the one, you're the one. You're the one, you're the one. You're the one, you're the one. Yeah, you're the one. Little boy, you're the one. Do it one more time.
I was raised by wolves, bitch.
Hey!
This is the, I believe it's...
I'm the wolf, I'm the wolf!
This is the one that I was really shocked about, where, you know, we're obviously doing this three hits from hell. At this point, I'm not scared in this album at all. And what I mean by that is that it just is a pure, it's almost like a roots rock album to me, in a way that I get all the themes are evil, but I'm the one is, this is just straight up blues. Like, I was expecting at one point for this to explode into a real rocker, you know, like the first maybe verse or two would be, but it still works. It's just like, it's like evil Elvis Presley. Yeah, I mean, this is a classic-sounding song, and it really, like, was, again, just it was surprising to me, and I really enjoy this song.
This dude was fucking somebody or something at the age of 5, and that's not fucking evil enough for you?
That's the vibe I got, and I don't care what animals or any bestiality that's happening, that's the vibe I got.
All right, so I'm the one, 321 on this one, according to my notes. And I have written down here, and now for something completely different, an even bluesier rocker, acoustic guitar included. While this isn't the strongest Danzig song, nor is it the weakest, I really like it included in the mix of songs on this album. Just like you mentioned, Lewis Cannon, it fits in so perfect with this album, even though it's not like it's not a heavy song. It's just kind of, it's a bluesy song.
It lets you take a breath, right?
Yeah. Kind of. It's kind of a cool little setup for what's to come. I give this one 8 out of 10.
It's a great sequence.
Yep.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah. They hit you, then they let you take a break for a second, and then they hit you one more time coming with tracks. By the way, is this the final track on the LP or tape, or is this the beginning of
Side 2? Gene, do you know? I owned this on CD for the first. This is the first CD.
I am pretty sure it finishes. Side 1 finishes with the next track.
That makes sense to me.
Anyway, that's Her Black Wings.
Blackest of the black, dark of the night, come to me, my bleeding light. See, she comes now, enter oblivion. Hey, she is part of a light in my own. Hey, she here in twilight, oh, please, she
is this evil enough for you fuck loose?
Yes, this is this is kind of like the deuce of the album. Where it's just
the album's called Loose Cannon Fuge.
It is. I was wondering when you were going to throw that in there, but I was going to let somebody else take it.
Yeah, okay. No, I love this tune, man. Again, like I said, I tipped my hand early. There really isn't really a bad track on here, but Her Black Wings is like... it just delivers on so many levels, and this is kind of like perfect Danzig.
Black rings. Can you imagine Danzig in a nice sweaty white Elvis outfit like he did in Vegas near the end of his career?
I know, because he does can imagine it.
Say it again.
I know he can imagine it. I think his next record is going to be a fucking Elvis covers record.
That's what I heard it was. But by the way, he has the physique of later Elvis.
Hey!
But going to the song,
fan, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's committed to the bit, man. He's like,
he really
is. This is as fat as Elvis was when he died on the throne.
I've heard that actually, when he comes on stage, his rider is peanut butter fried sandwiches right before he hits the stage.
Hey!
Part of his dietary requirements. But let's go into the song itself. Her Black Wings. Love this track. Again, this is something I seriously. A week and a half ago, I had never heard this album.
Wow.
I played, I did it. This is one where I went back to I'm the One and Her Black Wing. It's kind of like a rotation because just like the first two songs, they flow into each other so well. And Her Black Wings, I love the revolving riff. I don't even know what you even call that because I'm talking to two musicians.
No,
what
that's a good way to describe it.
Is that... Gene, would you agree too?
Yeah.
It never stops, is my point. And that just is, it's simple. It works. The lyrics are great. He doesn't bossing it up. This is probably between this and the opening track are my favorite two songs on the album, six and one.
If I recall, this is the first song that I heard from this album. So great riff. And then the chorus in its simplicity is catchy, perfect lead to match the song, and it's and a simple pulse lead bridge that is great. I love the riff and the simple piano accompaniment to end the track. This is a 10 out of 10 for me.
All right. Well, up next is the song Devil's Plaything.
Love is a flame. A devil's thing, a violent stone about to be born. Just look in these eyes, see all the lies, all these things you see, you cannot deny. And this flame that burns inside, if you get too close, burn you alive. Just look in these eyes and see if they lie. All these words I speak cannot deny.
I still think this is a really, really, really good song, but this is probably the first time on the record that I go, not my favorite tune.
I'm in the same way. This is when it gets the first chunk of this record, like side one, let's just call it. It is super strong. This one, opening side, let's call it two. It's okay.
4:13 on this one. Now,
can I ask you why you tell the times every time?
Just for length of, so people understand what we're talking with as far as the length.
I think it adds color to the conversation.
Hey, so. The color? Okay. Time and color.
There's no
time
rhyme to the color. Ancient Mirror on this one.
Nope.
So, let's see.
Quick quiz right now. What is the length of the Pink Floyd song Time?
4:53 7 seconds.
Let's see if that's true. Continue, Gene. I just want to see, since you're a big fan of Time.
Ticking away. So, I just went James Hetfield. Yeah, ticking away. The moments that make up the dirty.
Are you ready? What?
Yeah.
Okay, Gene.
Yes.
Again, because you're a big fan of track length. What is the album version length of Time? And then I'll also try to get you with the single end of it. Go ahead, Gene.
I'm gonna put out 4:53.
It is 6:52.
I was close.
But it moves so fast.
The moment.
It moves so fast that it seems like 4:50.
Yeah, I was thinking the Metallica cover was 4:53. So I remember after the power of Her Black Wings flipping over the cassette to be serenaded with this pretty acoustic piece along with Glenn's powerful voice singing a nice little ditty. Of course, that only lasts for so long before it kicks into full gear. Great intro followed by more greatness. I really like the simple verse section sans bass. Later verse sections do include the bass, of course, and that's cool. Hauntingly awesome bridge section. More great guitar work by Christ. This one actually gave a 9 out of 10. So this one I liked a little bit more than you guys did.
Okay.
7:77.
Pretty good, but again, I think we're getting to the part of the record that if I have to say there are weak moments, this would be included with the last song, but this is better than the previous song.
In dog beers, I've had 777. Well, how many beers is that?
You've had 111.
I've only had one.
You've had 111.
111 or 177777? 77.
Yes.
Divided by 5.
Yep.
I guess the 777 thing, I can't take it seriously because it's basically saying, you know, it's the number of the devil. But the
No. 666 is the number of the devil.
I understand that, okay. But they're saying 666, but I'm going to take it next level. I'm doing 777, which pretty much sounds like a variation of when you're in Vegas and you're getting craps or whatever.
He was mocking Michael Sweet directly with this song. Yeah.
How so? Please explain.
Well, that was a joke. Well, Stryper was like, their thing was, we're 777.
I did not know that.
My eraser's well worn, because I make a lot of mistakes.
You know, I would enjoy this more if it was 7-Eleven and ended with a Slurpee. What is the length of time on this one?
5:39 on this one.
Damn it! Why wouldn't that have been, a fine title? Fuck 777. 5:39 gets right to the point.
So this one is it's moving forward. It's almost a Delta Blues like riff starting the track. It's haunting and it has an edge to it. Glenn laying down some mood lyrically. Then there's some slide action on the guitar and it's awesome bass riff kicking in. bringing the song to its full realization. I think that this was one of those grower songs for me when the album came out, but now I really dig it. It's simple, it's catchy, it's creative. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Okay, well, that brings us to the 10th track, Blood and Tears. Favorite track, but I still think it's pretty kick-ass.
I just think it's cool because it shows his effeminate side about menstruation.
What about like an intellectual response?
All right, so this one, Luce, are you ready? It's
can I get you before? It's 419.
You got what it. You good guess. You nailed it, brother. You got it. So, and now for something completely different, a Danzig ballad, I'm guessing. I really like the lead pieces, the piano, the organ, the whole ball of wax. Another grower for me back in the day, possibly a song I'd skip over once I got the CD, but now I dig it. The overall lead section is serviceable, but lacks something compared to earlier and the following lead riffs. Kind of reminds me of the track You and Me from the Lesson Zero soundtrack that Glenn did, in a way, but of course this is much heavier for sure, and that one had a lot more of an Elvis vibe to it than this does.
Which track on the Lesson Zero soundtrack?
You and Me.
Okay, not Rock and Roll All Night by Poison.
Mr. Rocket.
No, that was my next
Mr.
one.
Mr. Rocket, okay. Kick it.
So this,
thank you.
the song ends perfectly, unlike our commentary on it. 8 out of 10.
You notice I haven't scored anything so far.
Yeah, I know.
Half-chub.
Would you like me to? I'll do a summary at the end.
You can do whatever you want. Yeah, it's all good. It's been fun.
The Wild West here.
The next track is Girl, and I fucking love this tune. I would give this a 10 out of 10. It's weird because I think probably the first 30 times I heard this record, I didn't remember this song at all. And now it's like one of the ones that I kind of go to.
412. Huh, I beat you.
420, brah.
Yet another song that helps me appreciate John Christ's guitar playing even more. Just those little nuances that had subtle flair to so many songs and Danzig's so early albums. I don't have a lot to say regarding this track other than that. It's one of the weaker offerings for me, but it's still a great song that fits
boo,
so well on this release.
Gene, boo.
This one I gave a 7.5 out of 10. It's the lowest one off the album so far.
What, how do you even get to a 7.5? Can't you just commit?
I can't.
7 or an 8?
Nope, I can't. Because it's close to an 8, but it's not quite a 7. Fuck. So,
fucking, it's weak.
I can't commit.
It's weak.
Just a half point one way or the other, man. Just
God. 7.34. Get the fuck out of here. 7.77.
Well, this amazing, spooky-ass record concludes with Pain in the World.
full of hell. Room to burn. Heart full of something clean. Dreadful to know. Back in the mirror. Hard on the soul. They should have known it from birth.
I like the song. It's not my favorite. If I gotta go the Gene Vogel way, I'm gonna say about a 7 out of 10.
All right. No percentages? No decimals?
I'm sorry, nothing? 7.23 out of 10.
What I like about it is it just kind of describes how I talk about Baco is in my. I just add my pain. But Gene, wow. What say you?
This one clocks in at 5:52, so we're almost at 6 minutes
Jesus
on this
Christ,
one.
With the time.
A long one.
Yeah, we're getting a little longer here to end the
now,
album.
Now, is that the longest track on the album, Gene, for the facts?
Oh,
let's see. Yes or no? I think it is, actually. Let me just double check my notes.
It is by at least, yep. I would say.
7 inches.
Almost. No. Oh, Devil's Plaything is almost as long, but it supersedes it by how many seconds, Gene? 13 seconds. Is that weird? Is it weird that 13 seconds, an evil number on a Halloween album? Fuck yes. That's how it's ending. All this stuff makes sense. This is all arithmetic.
It was intentional.
Hey!
Absolutely it is. Gene, please continue. I am freaked out by this.
You should see his face right now.
There's something haunting about the chord progression in the intro of this track that I really did. God damn you.
I can, yeah.
I almost
it's definitely
got through
haunting.
Baco, come on.
Oh, God. Go ahead.
All right. There's something haunting about the chord progression in the intro that I really dig. The verse section helps feed this vibe, and things get even more creepy. The more I listen to the song, the more I like it. The layers, the vibe, everything just comes off great together to create what I'd consider a damn near Danzig masterpiece.
Hey!
The last minute or so is just ass-kicking energy, and I love that it's superb. This one I gave a 9 out of 10, so I like this a little more than you did, Baco. Okay. I'm surprised.
Right on. Well, for me, Danzig, of course, is like I said, a top 5, top 10 artist of my life. This record is one I definitely go back to a lot. It summarizes everything that is great about Danzig, about the guitar playing of John Christ, the drumming of Chuck Biscuits. You know, I honestly, other as much as I love Iri Vaughn, I'm not sure he's just a very he might be the perfect bass player for the band because he just doesn't have a lot of personality.
Right.
He fits that blues pocket. The songs actually stand out because of how simplistic the band is, and that's hard to do. It's easy to be a simplistic band. It's not easy to be this simplistic and be good and be catchy and be fun to listen to. And also, of course, be evil.
I think you described our entire show. Simplistic, but somehow fun to listen to. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yes, no?
That's okay. Yeah, I can live with that.
We'll work with it. Of the first four albums, is this your favorite?
No. The Danzig 3 is probably my favorite.
Why'd you pick this one then? Just curious.
To be honest, I thought this is the one you would like the most.
Oh, that's very sweet. But what I'll tell you is the fact that this one actually makes me, maybe it is an entry, maybe it's not the best one, but for me what it does is it makes me interested in checking out the rest of the catalog, at least the first four albums like you're talking about. So,
yeah.
Well done.
I will definitely say this for anybody listening who hasn't listened to Danzig. If this turns you on to them, it should only turn you on to their first four records. Because it's cool. Much different after this.
I'll just summarize this. Again, better than expected. I enjoyed my homework project of both Iced Earth and Danzig, just discovering albums I'd never heard in full before. And half chub.
For me, overall, for the first 10 to 100 listens to this cassette back in the day.
On the boombox. On the boombox in the back of the 96 car.
Yes. 76. Oh. 76.
76.
Did you live in Owatonna?
I did not.
10% of the people who lived in Owatonna when I was in high school drove a 76 Monte Carlo.
Nice.
It was a classic car. What can you say?
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, man.
Nothing wrong with that. No. So it became one of my favorites, favorite albums that I've ever owned, and it's still true to this very day. While some of the songs aren't as strong as some of the others, that, as we've mentioned, in the context of the whole album, it's just everything clicks. It's kind of like a little bit of what we talked about with the Iced Earth previously.
Sure.
It's probably even more so here with this album. I can listen to this whole album without skipping a track. Some of them were grower songs, but in the whole, everything works.
Real quick to counter that, I would actually say, I don't think you can listen to the Iced Earth record pick a song. You have to listen to the whole thing. I do think you can cherry pick a few tunes on this record.
Oh, you could definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, pick some tunes on this. Definitely. Her Black Wings. There's a few of them that we mentioned.
I'm the one.
Although Snakes of Christ, you got to get in there with Long Way Back from Hell. Those kind of work together.
Yeah.
Snakes
of Christ is separated from that on that Thrall Demon Sweat Live thing. And I think I like that version better than this one.
Was it a live version then?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but that works too. Like, even with the Rain Song with Jimmy Page, he did not like the fact that everybody liked to listen to the Song Remains the Same with the Rain Song. He always said those are separate. So when he did special compilation albums later, he purposely put those songs far apart from each other.
Yeah.
Silly, by the way.
It bugs the hell out of me because every time I hear the Song Remains the Same, I want to hear the Rain Song. So every time I hear the Long Way Back from Hell, I want to hear Snakes of Christ.
I get it.
But I could listen to them separate. Same thing with some of the other songs that we mentioned.
By the way,
earlier.
Going back 40 minutes, Not of This World. That's a song after Twisted Can.
Ah, yeah, that's right. For me, I want to give this album a 10 so bad, 10 out of 10. I got to go like a 9.5. I can't quite get it up to a 10, but it's damn near close. But again, it's one of my personal all-time favorite albums. So 9.5 out of 10. I'm gonna have to go with that.
Yeah.
It's almost a 10. So, I mean, there may be even some days where it's a 10. Some other ratings that I pulled off the internet. Album of the Year, which is a site that does their Metacritic. They pull all the different ratings. They pulled an 85 out of 100 on this. Rate Your Music, similar situation. 3.8 out of 5. And that's based on actual just users. So that's 2,452 ratings. It gives us almost 4 stars. When we get into the professional ratings, we get AllMusic gives it 4.5. I don't know who this is, Robert Christgau or Christgau?
Christgau.
B-. Entertainment Weekly gives us an A-.
Wow.
Well, that means nothing, but go ahead.
I was just surprised it was in Entertainment Weekly.
First off, Entertainment Weekly is a whore, but continue. But everything else you're saying, I believe so far.
Rock Hard. Out of Germany, they give it a 10 out of 10. Rolling Stone album.
Is Rock Hard part of the... I think that's the next level from Half Chub.
Covers the fire rating system, right.
Okay.
Rolling Stone album guide, 3.5 out of 5. And then Spin gives us 4.5 out of 5.
I'm sorry, but if this record got 3.5 out of 5 from Rolling Stone, that's basically an 8 out of 5 from Rolling Stone.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that's the extra review.
It is funny too. By the way, everybody turns into a whore. Rolling Stone used to be hardcore and everything. If you go to rollingstone.com, everything is awesome.
Yeah, their website is way different than the magazine, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying.
Everybody who hated Rolling Stone bought whatever rollingstone.com and said everything is awesome.
And I'm not sure if you remember this, but from the actual magazine Rolling Stone, if they reviewed an album, it was like a very long review. And if you go to rollingstone.com, you look at your research.
It's like a Guitar World magazine review.
It says this is an album and it is a thing, and then it has a rating. That's all it says.
Did you have any closing thoughts here, Lewis?
I do. I just want to be just to comment a little bit, because kind of like you've gone over production before. Love the production on here, and I am a bit of a Rick Rubin nut swinger. So mm-hmm. I believe this is part of his genius era from, yeah. I'll call it from 1985. Agreed. 1985 up to what is one of my favorite Tom Petty albums, Wildflower. Wildflowers, and that was when he pretty much was done with me, in my opinion. But you can definitely, I think, see his influence on this album. So that's what I think takes it to the next level, in my opinion. And yeah, again, as I've said before, much better than I expected and different than I expected as well. So that's my final thoughts.
Okay, well, before we go, what song do you make love to on this record?
I'm going to say, Snakes of Christ, because, if I'm doing it, I'm thinking of definitely snakes crawling all over Christ on the cross.
Gene?
Blood and tears.
Mm. I'm tired of being alive.
Yeah. That's nice. That should be the only time that you actually are wanting to be alive.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, it's three hits from hell, man, baby.
I think that tired of being alive is when you show up at the printing store. Let's get out of here, guys.
Rock's not dead.
But it's got 777 reasons to be alive.
Die. And God.
you, Baco. Happy birthday to you. I'm definitely fucking you. Happy birthday, Mr. President of Podcasts. Happy birthday to you.
Okay. Oh, my God. Fuck, I'm calling you on my birthday.
Okay, good.
Or I want to call on my birthday.
Fair enough.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.